I told you when we first met that I am a cynic by trade and training. I was a newspaper reporter and editor, and I worked for a while for Child Protective Services. And yet somehow, it occurred to me that it would be a smart thing to select a theme of miracles for the month of March. It may have been in a moment of lighthearted optimism, or perhaps a preventative strike, forcing some kind of positive outlook in the grayest month of the year between the end of winter and the beginning of spring. Whatever the case, here we are in March, and I have to say something about miracles. Now, growing up, I understood miracles to be very specific kinds of things, generally associated with biblical characters like Jesus or Moses. Occasionally, my grandmother would pray to St. Anthony when she'd lost her reading glasses, but it never felt like a real miracle when she found them perched above her forehead in her silver-blue permanent wave. This morning, I'd like to talk a little bit about what constitutes a miracle. So much of ministry and preaching is about asking questions and then questioning answers. Merriam-Webster defines a miracle as, one, an extraordinary event manifesting divine intervention in human affairs, or like the healing miracles described in the Gospels. Two, an extremely outstanding or unusual event, thing, or accomplishment. A bridge can be a miracle of engineering. Or, through Christian Science, a divinely natural phenomenon experienced humanly as the fulfillment of spiritual law. So what does that mean for our Unitarian Universalist sensibilities? Well, in the sources of our living tradition, the first source we cite is direct experience of that transcending mystery and wonder affirmed in all cultures, which moves us to a renewal of the spirit and an openness to the forces which create and uphold life. Which is lovely, and it looks good on a page, but what's it mean? What's that look like in action? Are miracles the magic told about in children's stories? Are they the folk tales and mythology of ancient cultures? Are miracles merely the as yet unexplained phenomena of nature and physics? What about miracles that we consider to be spiritual experiences, touching something deep within us that we might dare call a soul? Let's think a little bit about that. You have in your orders of service three little cards. There are different colors. If anybody does not have cards, Joy has little sets of cards to make sure everybody has one. You get one over here. Michael needs one. We got a couple in the back that need them. You're each going to need one, okay? Does everybody have cards? The kids can play this one, too. Let's make sure kids have the cards. Okay? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask, I think we've got some over here. People need cards over here? Does the little one have cards? Yeah, we're all set? Okay, thank you, Joy. So what we're going to do is I'm going to ask you different things. I'm going to say different things, and I'm going to ask if you think they're a miracle. And yellow means yes. Pink means no. And orange means, yeah, maybe, I'm not sure, or I don't know. Okay, so yellow is yes, yellow is yes, and the one that looks like the closest to red is stop is no, and orange is in the middle. Okay, let's start. The universe, is the universe a miracle? Okay, several yeses, a couple maybes, a couple no's, interesting. All right, what about the sun? The sun that hangs in the sky, okay? Okay, remember, pink is no, orange is maybe, yellow is yes. What about the seasons? The turning of the seasons. You got some no, we got some scientists, okay? What about love? Love, Is love a miracle? Interesting. Okay. What about a snowflake? A snowflake. Is a snowflake a miracle? We've got some poets and we've got some scientists. What about human hands? Okay. The brain. Mm-hmm. The birth of a child. The birth of your first grandchild. The smell of puppy. The smell of a puppy. Oh, right, yeah, okay. Breathing. Breathing. Where's Phil? Daffodils. Healing. Healing. Going from sickness to wellness. Okay. Stigmata. A stigmata, or a statue crying real tears. Interesting. So the Virgin Mary and a piece of toast is not it, huh? Okay. One person surviving an airplane crash. Okay. A person whose cancer goes away, but the doctors can't explain why. Okay. A flower pushing through a concrete sidewalk. Okay. In my cynical mind, thank you so much for, that was just fun. I should have done that at the beginning of my time here. In my cynical mind, I sometimes struggle to have faith in humanity, which is a real challenge for humanists. Now, I know that people are capable of great cruelty to one another, sometimes to the point where expecting meanness can be my default setting. So when I experience or when I witness an act of kindness, small or large, it can feel to me like a miracle, as in the extremely outstanding or unusual event sort of way. A miracle can be described then as a rarity or a singular experience, a unique thing to be treasured and cherished. To see miracles can be a spiritual practice. Now, I should say a thing or two about the term spiritual practice, as people can map all kinds of baggage and angst onto that word spiritual. In my understanding, after untold numbers of classes and countless hours studying theology, personal spirituality is an experience so deeply individual and personal that it, quite frankly, can't be defined. All that grad school for that. But a spiritual practice is anything that you do that centers you, that calms you down, takes you from anxious to non-anxious, clears your head, something that makes your heart feel better, that gives you strength to do the next right thing. A spiritual practice can be taking a walk. It can be sitting quietly and listening to birds. It can be watching the sunrise each morning with a cup of coffee in a quiet space. It can mean working out. It can mean Buddhist meditation, sitting on a cushion in a zendo. It can also mean saying the rosary or holding your dog or cat and being still with them. Anyone who has spent any time holding a sleeping baby knows that that can be a spiritual practice. I know a man who is an astrophysicist and affirmed atheist. He was on my internship committee at my church, the church that I served in California. I could tell you that it is an interesting challenge to preach each week to software engineers and physicists in Silicon Valley. They don't much care about poetry. But this man, my astrophysicist friend, his spiritual practice that I was able to witness is mathematics and mystery. Although I don't think he'd call it mystery necessarily, he would probably use words like scientific discovery and exploration. For him, wrestling with mathematical problems more complex than I can even wrap my brain around is a thing that makes his eyes light up. He immerses in it. And I can see his heart sort of expand. Mathematics then could be said to be his spiritual practice. Now we are blessed to belong to a faith tradition that permits science and mathematics to live in comfortable company with wonder and spirituality. Seeing miracles intentionally can be a spiritual practice, I said that. And if we look at the miracles as an extremely outstanding or unusual event, thing, or accomplishment, it is not so difficult. So how do we intentionally see miracles? Isn't that sort of kind of intuitive? The point of a miracle is that it's unexpected. Despite my cynicism, I am aware that there are little moments of kindness and generosity and vulnerability and gentleness that happen all around me every day. So if they happen, why don't I see them? Why do I remain cynical and discouraged with the state of the world? I do that because I am conditioned not to see those tender moments. It is much easier to grumble about how terrible things are than to witness or to participate in gestures of healing or love. Seeing kindness softens my heart. Seeing generosity reminds me that people can be good. Seeing compassion reminds me that I can do that. And as my demeanor shifts, I become less harsh, less judgmental, more compassionate. Not warm and fuzzy necessarily, but my sharp edges are smoothed out a little bit. And that is the mark of a spiritual practice. And that is how seeing miracles can be a spiritual practice. It takes a shift of our brain to intentionally seek out the kindness and beauty around us. We live with a 24/7 news cycle that screams at us from various electronic devices in our pockets just how terrible the world can be. To look for the good takes practice. We have to create new neuronal pathways in our brain. I'm not going to assume here that people don't know what neuronal pathways are, but I'm going to, just for giggles, anybody know what they are? Neuronal pathways, of course, one, okay. Neuronal pathways I describe as ruts of thinking sort of worn into our brain, you know? They're familiar ways of doing things, familiar ways of thinking. Like we always go to the grocery store by this route. Let me offer a little demonstration. This is one of my fun things. As you are able, take your hands and put them like this. Now, go like that. And look down at them so that all your fingers are crossed. And notice which thumb is on top. Okay? Now, I want you to undo them and do them the other way. With the other thumb on top. It doesn't feel right. Does it not feel right just in your hands? No, it's in your head too, isn't it? Right? Okay, now undo it back the way you the regular way, okay? And then do it again. Not quite as uncomfortable as it was. Because the second time you do something, you're starting to wear a new neuronal pathway. Okay? I liken this, I grew up in the country, so occasionally we'd pack in a yard. And if you park in the same place a couple of times, your vehicle will put ruts in the grass, right? And to create, those are your neuronal pathways. And to create new neuronal pathways, what you have to do is get up out of those ruts. And that's the hardest part, okay, is making that change up out of that way of thinking, out of that method of doing something. So when we engage in seeing miracles as a spiritual practice, we're doing that. It's a counter-cultural behavior. In a world that wants to tell us how terrible things are, for us to see the good is jumping up out of those ruts and creating new neuronal pathways. And a spiritual practice is part of that. It is learning to live in a way that makes us feel centered, that makes us feel grounded, that makes us feel stable in a world that sometimes isn't stable. When we do that, we are often open to seeing other things that can be quite powerful. I don't think I've shared this before. I haven't told you how I became a minister, right? There's a wee bit of profanity. I think you'll probably live. So I was at a crossroads in my life. I was feeling adrift, unsettled. I had just been through a losing political campaign and a nasty breakup, and I was trying to get myself out of this nasty funk. And so I turned to the familiar work of 12-step work. Some of you know I'm in recovery. Long time, 30 years or something. So I was doing some 11-step work, which is a practice where people in recovery work to improve our conscious contact with a higher power, however we define that, seeking wisdom and guidance from a source other than, you know, the brain hamsters that are normally running things. So I spent some time writing about God and how I defined that entity, how I doubted what that entity looked like, what my relationship with God might be, and my relationship with the world around me. I didn't come up with any new or startling discoveries, but the practice I was engaging in got me to some deep philosophical and theological thinking. And I had recently joined a congregation in the small community where I was, and one morning, as I was sitting in church, I experienced something quite profound. The minister of the day, who was in the pulpit that day, was the director of religious education. And he was telling the story of how he came to go into ministry. And as he was describing his experience, I became aware that I was warm. Now, it was one of those crisp, clear, cold Maine January mornings, the kind where the sun shines in at a slant because it's so low in the sky. And I happened to be sitting in a chair in that puddle of sunlight. So it was not unusual to feel warm, but this felt a little different in a strange way. And I remember gripping the arms of my chair because it felt funny. And then I was aware of what felt like this sort of thing I couldn't see, this large spherical weight, like a giant beach ball sort of thing, pressing on my lap and against my person. It wasn't hard, but it was firm. And I no longer heard the minister talking. And the words that came into my head at that moment were, "Well, shit. I'm going to be a minister." Oh boy. That's what happened. Once I heard them aloud in my head, the weight and the warmth went away, although the sunlight remained, and I really just couldn't move. I just sat there and wept quietly. In telling that story, previously I often say that I figured that profanity was in the message was to let me know that that was for me and not the very polite young guy next to me who ended up going to seminary, yes. But and there was a woman in that congregation, and I was a member of this congregation, and there was a woman who had talked to me before that and said, "You should be a minister." And I said, "That's a terrible idea. You have to be nice to people. You have to deal with committees. That's where good ideas go to die. People in groups get stupid." And she's like, "You should do it. You should do it." And she told me later that she had been sitting two rows behind me across the aisle. And she didn't know, she didn't see the things that I was feeling, but she knew something was happening, and she saw that moment happen. I went home from church that day as soon as I could get out of that room. And I got online and I started looking at seminaries. That fall, I enrolled at Bangor Theological. The next year, I transferred to Boston, to Andover Newton, and here I am. Now, none of this made any sense in my world. This is not a thing that I am prone to experiencing. I don't generally do the woo-woo stuff. You know, remember, professional cynic, but there it is. I had this thing, and it happened. And it felt like I couldn't, like once I knew this, there was, I could no longer avoid it. And so since that day, even in the darkest, most doubt-filled nights of seminary and the hardest, heartbreaking days of ministry, I have known that this is what I am meant to do. Did I experience a miracle? I don't know. Did I experience a preemptive hot flash? The age it might have been. With perspective now, I can tell you that it was not like that. But that morning in church had a profound effect on me, and it changed the trajectory of my life. Now, I would like, because we have a good full house today, I would like for us to take 5 minutes and connect with each other. I want you to turn to your neighbor and have a conversation, just a little brief one, about a time you experienced something that you would call miraculous. 5 minutes, I'll time it. Talk to each other. about 30 more seconds. So, another sign of a healthy church is you can't get them to shut up. Miracles are often defined by their unexpected or unanticipated nature. And yet, we can find them if we look for them. Fred Rogers, remember Mr. Rogers? Told the story of how his mother comforted him when he was a child and he would see frightening news on television. She told him, look for the helpers. There are always people helping in an emergency. Miracles are all around us. It is up to us to see them. And if we don't see them, perhaps we are the ones called upon to be them. May this be our practice and our prayer. Blessed be, and amen.